Gone Girl is a psychological thriller that has captivated millions with its twisted exploration of marriage, media manipulation, and the masks we wear for those closest to us. Published in 2012, Gillian Flynn's novel became an instant cultural phenomenon, spending 8 weeks atop the New York Times bestseller list and selling over 20 million copies worldwide. The 2014 film adaptation, directed by David Fincher and starring Ben Affleck and Rosamund Pike, further cemented its status as a modern classic, with Pike receiving an Oscar nomination for her chilling portrayal of Amy Dunn. Beyond its commercial success, Gone Girl sparked countless discussions about toxic relationships, gender dynamics, and the cool girl monologue that resonated with readers worldwide. Even celebrities like Reese Witherspoon and Mindy Kaling have cited it as one of their favorite psychological thrillers. Let's dive into this masterpiece of manipulation that forever changed how we think about the phrase, "till death do us part." Nick and Amy Dunn appear to be the quintessential modern couple, both attractive New York writers with successful careers and a seemingly enviable marriage. Their relationship begins like a romantic comedy, a chance meeting at a party where Nick charms Amy with a joke about olives, followed by a magical kiss in sugar-dusted streets outside a bakery. Amy, the inspiration for her parents' famous Amazing Amy children's book series, falls hard for this handsome Midwesterner with his river-wavy accent and easy charm. Their early years together are blissful. Amy describes herself as fat with love, finding joy in the domestic rhythms of their shared life in their Brooklyn brownstone purchased by her wealthy parents. She creates elaborate treasure hunts for their anniversaries, crafting personalized clues that celebrate their inside jokes and shared memories. Nick enjoys the perks of being married to a trust fund baby with literary pedigree, sailing on Nantucket Sound with her parents, and basking in Amy's adoration. But beneath this glossy surface, cracks begin to form. When the 2008 recession hits, both lose their magazine jobs within weeks of each other. Nick becomes increasingly distant and resentful, spending money they don't have on expensive suits while refusing basic household responsibilities. When his mother is diagnosed with terminal cancer, he decides they should move back to his hometown of Carthage, Missouri, a decision Amy never fully accepts. Using the last of her trust fund money to buy a bar for Nick and his twin sister Go, Amy finds herself transplanted from cosmopolitan New York to a dying Midwestern town filled with foreclosed homes and abandoned malls. In Missouri, their marriage deteriorates rapidly. Nick spends long hours at the bar while Amy attempts to fit in with local women, attending charity walks and cooking casseroles. She tries to support Nick through his mother's illness and his father's Alzheimer's, but he grows increasingly cold and withdrawn. When Amy suggests having a baby, Nick reacts with horror, telling her their marriage couldn't handle the additional stress. The golden couple has tarnished beyond recognition, setting the stage for what comes next. On the morning of Nick and Amy's fifth wedding anniversary, Nick returns home to find his front door wide open, the living room in disarray, and his wife nowhere to be found. There are signs of a struggle, overturned furniture, broken glass, and most disturbingly, blood in the kitchen that someone attempted to clean up. Nick immediately becomes the prime suspect in what appears to be a domestic homicide. As police detectives Rhonda Boney and Jim Gilpin investigate, they discover troubling inconsistencies in Nick's story. He can't account for several hours on the morning of Amy's disappearance. He seems oddly detached about his missing wife, unable to answer basic questions about her daily routine or friends. Most damning, he smiles inappropriately during a press conference about Amy's disappearance, a killer smile that the media seizes upon as evidence of his guilt. The investigation reveals that despite Nick's claims of financial stability, the couple is deeply in debt with $212,000 in credit card charges. They've also taken out a substantial life insurance policy on Amy. The Dunns' seemingly perfect marriage appears to have been a facade, with neighbors reporting loud arguments and Amy confiding to her best friend, Noelle Hawthorne, that she feared her husband might kill her. Meanwhile, Amy's wealthy parents, Rand and Mary Beth Elliott, arrive in Carthage to organize search parties and media appearances. They initially support Nick, but grow increasingly suspicious as evidence mounts against him. When Noelle publicly announces that Amy was pregnant at the time of her disappearance, information Nick claims to know nothing about, public opinion turns decisively against him. Ellen Abbott, a Nancy Grace-like television host, leads the charge in portraying Nick as a callous, murderous husband who killed his pregnant wife. The final nail in Nick's coffin comes when police discover Amy's diary, which chronicles the deterioration of their marriage in heartbreaking detail. The entries describe Nick's growing coldness, his financial irresponsibility, and eventually physical abuse. The last entry chillingly states, "This man might kill me." With the discovery of what appears to be the murder weapon, the handle of a punch puppet with Amy's blood on it, Nick's arrest seems imminent. In a stunning mid-novel twist, we discover that Amy is alive and orchestrating the entire scenario. The second part of the book shifts to Amy's real-time narration, revealing that she has meticulously framed Nick for her murder as revenge for his infidelity and neglect. "I'm so much happier now that I'm dead," she declares in her first authentic chapter. Technically missing, soon to be presumed dead, Amy explains that she discovered Nick's affair with a young student named Andy and decided that simple divorce was too merciful a punishment. Instead, she spent a year planning an elaborate frame-up, creating a fake diary documenting abuse that never happened, using her pregnant friend Noelle's urine for pregnancy tests, strategically using credit cards to create debt, and planting Nick's fingerprints on incriminating evidence while he slept. In perhaps the novel's most famous passage, Amy delivers a scathing monologue about the cool girl, the impossible female ideal she pretended to be to win Nick's love. Men always say that as the defining compliment, don't they? "She's a cool girl." Being the cool girl means I am a hot, brilliant, funny woman who adores football, poker, dirty jokes, and burping, who plays video games, drinks cheap beer, loves threesomes and anal sex, and jams hot dogs and hamburgers into her mouth like she's hosting the world's biggest culinary gangbang while somehow maintaining a size 2, because cool girls are above all hot, hot and understanding. Amy reveals that she maintained this exhausting persona for years, pretending to enjoy Nick's interests, never complaining, and always being sexually available. When she finally showed her true self, opinionated, demanding, and complex, Nick's love faded. "He couldn't believe I didn't love waxing my vagina raw and blowing him on request," she observes bitterly. In her mind, Nick's betrayal justifies her elaborate revenge. "He killed my soul, which should be a crime. In fact, it is a crime, according to me." The treasure hunt Amy created for their anniversary wasn't a loving tradition, but a sadistic tour of Nick's infidelities, with each clue leading to places where he'd been with Andy. The final gift, Punch and Judy puppets, symbolizes her narrative. Nick killed his pregnant wife in a fit of rage. Amy's plan isn't just to frame Nick. She intends to disappear permanently with a new identity. Using cash withdrawn over many months, she purchases a car under a false name and hides at a remote cabin complex in the Ozarks. She transforms herself physically, gaining weight, cutting and dyeing her hair, wearing glasses, to become Ozark Amy, a forgettable middle-aged woman. Life as a fugitive proves more difficult than Amy anticipated. She befriends a pair of drifters at the cabin complex, Greta and Jeff, but they eventually discover her money belt and rob her, leaving her nearly penniless. Desperate and with nowhere to turn, Amy contacts Desi Collins, a wealthy ex-boyfriend from her boarding school days who has remained obsessed with her for decades. Amy manipulates Desi by fabricating a story about Nick's abuse, claiming he kidnapped and tortured her before she escaped. The sympathetic Desi brings her to his luxurious lake house, where Amy quickly realizes she's traded one prison for another. Desi becomes controlling, monitoring her food intake, dictating her appearance, and essentially keeping her captive in his isolated mansion. Though materially comfortable, Amy finds herself trapped by Desi's delicate bullying and unwanted advances. Meanwhile, Nick has hired Tanner Bolt, a high-profile defense attorney specializing in husbands accused of killing their wives. With Tanner's guidance, Nick attempts to repair his public image through a heartfelt television interview with respected journalist Sharon Schieber. Just as the interview airs, Nick's mistress, Andy, holds a press conference, revealing their affair, seemingly destroying any chance of public redemption. As the evidence against Nick mounts and his arrest seems inevitable, he begins to understand the brilliance of Amy's plan. He realizes that she has been following him for months, documenting his affair and planting evidence that makes him appear guilty beyond reasonable doubt. Nick knows the truth, but faces an impossible challenge, convincing others that his missing wife is actually a calculating psychopath framing him for murder. Just as Nick's situation appears hopeless, Amy executes the final phase of her plan. After watching Nick's interview where he appears genuinely remorseful and declares his love for her, Amy decides to return to him, but on her terms. She murders Desi by slitting his throat during a sexual encounter, then stages the scene to support her story of captivity and escape. 40 days after her disappearance, Amy returns home in dramatic fashion, stumbling from Desi's car covered in blood, her hair chopped, rope marks on her wrists, and surveillance cameras capturing the moment. As reporters swarm and cameras flash, Nick embraces his rescued wife while whispering in her ear, "You fucking bitch." Amy's return transforms the narrative instantly. Nick goes from suspected killer to wronged husband whose wife was kidnapped by an obsessive stalker. The police, media, and public immediately accept Amy's story despite its inconsistencies. Detective Boney remains skeptical but lacks evidence to challenge the new narrative. Amy is hailed as a hero who survived captivity and killed her captor in self-defense. In private, Nick confronts Amy about her elaborate scheme. She calmly admits everything, explaining that she returned because she was touched by his public declaration of love. When Nick threatens to expose her, Amy counters with a chilling ultimatum. If he leaves her or reveals the truth, she will destroy him completely. She has preserved his semen from fertility treatments years earlier and can claim he forced her to return through threats. "I'm the bitch who makes you better," she tells him. Nick contemplates killing Amy but realizes he's trapped. Without her, he would face public condemnation for abandoning his traumatized wife. With her, he must live in constant fear, never knowing when she might turn on him again. In a moment of disturbing clarity, Nick acknowledges that Amy brings out both his best and worst self, that without her, any normal relationship would feel bland by comparison. In the aftermath of Amy's return, the couple establishes an uneasy detente based on mutual manipulation. Nick moves back into their bedroom, pretending to love Amy while secretly working with Detective Boney to find evidence against her. Amy secures a book deal to tell her version of events, ensuring Nick must publicly support her narrative or face consequences. The balance of power shifts decisively when Amy reveals she's pregnant, genuinely this time, using Nick's stored sperm from their fertility treatments years earlier. Nick realizes he cannot leave his child alone with Amy, effectively trapping him in the marriage forever. As Amy puts it, "That's marriage, the give and take of sleep and sex and spite and tenderness." In the novel's final pages, Amy reflects on her philosophy of love. Love should have conditions. Unconditional love is undisciplined. It's disastrous. She has successfully reassembled her husband according to her specifications, though she's troubled by his parting comment, "Because every morning you have to wake up and be you." The book ends with Amy determined to have the last word. "I think I've earned that." Throughout Gone Girl, Flynn offers a scathing critique of media sensationalism and its power to shape public perception. The investigation into Amy's disappearance quickly becomes a media circus, with television personalities like Ellen Abbott, a thinly veiled Nancy Grace, rushing to judgment based on superficial evidence. Nick's inappropriate smile during a press conference becomes proof of his guilt, while Amy's carefully crafted diary entries are accepted as unquestionable truth. Flynn illustrates how easily narratives can be manipulated by those who understand media dynamics. Amy's parents, who created the Amazing Amy books, are expert image managers who know how to generate public sympathy. Amy herself understands that her status as a beautiful, pregnant, wealthy white woman makes her disappearance irresistible to news outlets. She exploits these dynamics masterfully, creating a story that fits perfectly into established true crime narratives. Nick, initially clueless about media management, learns to play the game with coaching from Tanner Bolt. His televised interview with Sharon Schreiber demonstrates how public opinion can be swayed through carefully chosen words and practiced sincerity. The novel suggests that in the court of public opinion, perception matters more than truth, a reality that Amy exploits and Nick eventually learns to navigate. Amy Dunn ranks among literature's most fascinating villains, a high-functioning sociopath whose intelligence and meticulous planning make her truly dangerous. Her psychology is shaped by her unusual childhood as the inspiration for the Amazing Amy books, which created an impossible standard she could never live up to. As she explains, Amazing Amy has to be better than me in every way, a dynamic that fostered deep resentment and perfectionism. Flynn provides glimpses of Amy's disturbed behavior long before her disappearance. In high school, she framed a classmate named Hillary Handy for stalking her, going so far as to throw herself downstairs to create injuries. In college, she falsely accused a boyfriend of rape after he broke up with her. These incidents reveal a pattern of elaborate revenge against anyone who fails to meet her expectations. Amy's narcissism manifests in her inability to accept rejection or criticism. When Nick stops worshiping her and begins an affair, she views it not just as betrayal, but as an existential assault. "He actually thought I would just go quietly," she marvels, unable to comprehend being discarded. Her revenge isn't simply about punishing Nick, but about reasserting control and forcing him to recognize her superiority. Most chillingly, Amy shows no remorse for her actions. She justifies framing Nick because he killed her soul, and she murders Desi without hesitation when he becomes an obstacle. Her moral code is entirely self-referential. According to me, it is a crime. This combination of intelligence, meticulous planning, and moral flexibility makes Amy a uniquely terrifying antagonist whose actions remain unpredictable throughout the novel. At its core, Gone Girl explores how we perform versions of ourselves in relationships and the consequences when those performances become unsustainable. Both Nick and Amy create false personas during their courtship, carefully crafting images that reflect what they believe their partner desires. Amy becomes the cool girl who never complains, loves football and beer, eats hot dogs without counting calories, and laughs at crude jokes while maintaining an effortless beauty. Nick, meanwhile, presents himself as more sophisticated and ambitious than he actually is, affecting the wit and charm of a New York intellectual while concealing his Midwestern roots and simple tastes. These performances extend beyond their relationship to their social circles and families. Amy plays the role of the perfect daughter to her parents' Amazing Amy franchise, while Nick maintains the facade of the successful writer and devoted husband to his twin sister Margot and the local community. Their carefully constructed images become increasingly difficult to maintain as their circumstances change. When economic pressures force them to abandon these performances, following their job losses and move to Missouri, their marriage begins to unravel. Amy resents having to reveal her true self, demanding, controlling, and high maintenance. Her perfectionism and need for control, previously masked by her cool girl persona, emerge in full force. Nick feels trapped by Amy's expectations and retreats into an affair with a young student who makes fewer demands and accepts him at face value. Their marriage becomes a battleground of disappointed expectations, mutual resentment, and increasingly toxic power dynamics. Flynn suggests that all relationships involve some degree of performance, from the white lies we tell to spare feelings to the versions of ourselves we present on first dates. However, she questions whether sustainable partnerships require a foundation of authenticity beneath these social niceties. The novel's disturbing conclusion implies that Nick and Amy's mutual understanding of each other's worst qualities creates a twisted but functional dynamic. They see each other clearly, manipulative, selfish, damaged, and choose to stay together anyway, bound by their shared capacity for deception and their understanding of each other's darkness. As Nick reflects, we complete each other in the nastiest, most toxic way possible. The author ultimately presents a dark meditation on marriage, suggesting that perhaps the most honest relationships are those where both partners acknowledge their capacity for manipulation and choose to stay anyway. Their final arrangement, built on mutual understanding of their worst qualities rather than idealized versions of themselves, represents a perverse form of authenticity. Set against the backdrop of the 2008 recession, Gone Girl explores how economic insecurity can destabilize identity and relationships. Nick and Amy's move from New York to Missouri represents not just a geographical shift, but a dramatic downward mobility that neither is equipped to handle. Before the recession, both enjoyed successful careers in magazine journalism, an industry that collapsed virtually overnight. Their sudden unemployment forces them to confront uncomfortable questions about their value and purpose. Nick feels emasculated by financial dependence on Amy's dwindling trust fund, while Amy resents sacrificing her cosmopolitan lifestyle for Nick's hometown. The novel's setting in Carthage, Missouri, with its abandoned mall, foreclosed homes, and unemployed factory workers, serves as a powerful metaphor for American economic decline. The once thriving riverfront town has been hollowed out by economic forces beyond residents' control, creating a pervasive sense of loss and resentment that mirrors Nick and Amy's marriage. Flynn connects personal and economic disappointment throughout the novel. When Nick reflects on his failed dreams of becoming a serious writer, his disappointment parallels broader cultural anxieties about downward mobility and diminished opportunities. Amy's elaborate revenge can be read partly as a response to this loss of status, a desperate attempt to regain control in an increasingly precarious world. The novel's final section explores perhaps its most disturbing question: how does one live with someone capable of elaborate deception and murder? Nick's decision to stay with Amy, despite knowing her true nature, represents a kind of surrender. Recognition that he cannot defeat her and must instead accommodate her pathology. Their arrangement becomes a mutual hostage situation. Amy controls Nick through their child and the threat of further manipulation, while Nick provides the adoration and stability she craves. Their marriage transforms into a performance for different audiences, the media, their families, and eventually their child. Behind closed doors, they engage in psychological warfare, each attempting to maintain leverage over the other. Flynn refuses to provide a conventional resolution or moral clarity. Instead, she leaves readers with the unsettling suggestion that Nick and Amy might be perfectly matched in their dysfunction. Their toxic relationship continues, not despite their mutual understanding of each other's worst qualities, but because of it. As Nick observes, "We're matched, as I've always known, and it's a match made in hell." This ambiguous ending challenges readers' expectations of justice or redemption. Amy's elaborate crimes go unpunished, while Nick becomes complicit in maintaining their facade. The novel concludes not with resolution, but with an uneasy equilibrium, a marriage sustained by mutual manipulation and the tacit agreement to maintain their carefully constructed fiction. In Gone Girl's dark vision, the greatest deception isn't what we show the world, but what we tell ourselves about the compromises we make to survive.